Welcome to the Who's Counting podcast with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. This is a podcast about everything having to do with elections across America, elections and how they should be run, elections and how they're not always run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about it. And today we have a wonderful guest joining us. All of our guests are wonderful, but this particular guest is a special friend because he is the new Secretary of State of the state of Wyoming and a former member of the Wyoming legislature. And I'm going to let him tell you more about himself, but I want to welcome Chuck Gray, the Secretary of State of the state of Wyoming. So Chuck, welcome to Who's Counting.
Well, thanks, Cleta. Thank you for having me. And it's an honor to be on. I served in the Wyoming State Legislature starting in 2017. I represented portions of East Casper, my neighbors there. That's where I was from, and worked on a lot of issues. One of the first bills I worked on in entering the legislature in early 2017 after the 2016 election was the ultrasound bill, which was the first pro-life bill in Wyoming in 30 years. We brought that through. We also brought through the ban on the University of Wyoming funding abortion and their student plan. That's another thing we had brought to the legislature. The coal export terminal issue, that's an issue I worked on a lot, trying to get our coal exported via the west coast of the United States. And unfortunately, Washington State, Oregon State, California are refusing to allow us to export coal. Brought through a bill that would have initiated an interstate lawsuit against the state of Washington for blocking our coal exports. And unfortunately, I was vetoed by the governor, but it spurred him to action, which was a good thing. Unfortunately, we didn't end up getting that case heard in the Supreme Court, but very passionate about our Wyoming core industries and protecting those core industries because they're all under attack: coal, oil, gas, ag. So worked on that issue a lot. And then the election integrity issue. I thought it was just outrageous that we didn't have a voter ID law in Wyoming. So started filing that bill in 2018. It came up a little short then, filed it in 2019, came up a little short then, 2020, came up a little short then. But then 2021, we were able to bring it through the legislature. It was a long process, but we brought that voter ID bill through. And then in 2022, all of a sudden, Ed Buchanan, the existing Secretary of State, decided not to run for re-election at the last moment. I had tried to run for Congress against Liz Cheney. She was just really not doing a good job, and decided to run against her in 2021. Dropped out of that race when Harriet Hageman received the endorsement from President Trump, and she's doing a great job there in D.C. Just saw her voting against the debt ceiling bill, and I'm totally against this debt ceiling raise. But anyway, fast forward about a year later, Ed Buchanan decided not to run for re-election and just really prayed about it, discerned a lot, had a 48-hour period, basically deadline to make a decision, but decided that based on the work I had done on election integrity and my passion on the issues, that it was appropriate that I should run for this. And it was a vigorous primary last year. We came through that and very excited to be serving as the Wyoming Secretary of State. We've had a very successful last 5 months. So
that's one of the things that I really appreciate because you came into the office ready to go and you have a very short legislative session in Wyoming.
Yes, it's a strength in our state constitution. We have many strengths in our state constitution. One of the things that I always love, and we'll talk about it later on the ending of crossover voting, our founders were very prescient. They did not allow a pocket veto from the governor. That when something comes through the legislature, it either has to be signed or it becomes law absent his signature. And that became very important in ending crossover voting and closing our primary. But the other strength in our state constitution is that we have a very short period from which the legislature can meet. It's a 60-day period every 2 years.
Oh, and every 2 years. So this is not an annual.
Well, the legislature meets annually, but the general session is in the odd years and typically goes about 40 days. And then the even years of the budget session, which usually goes about 20 to 25, but the legislature can only use 60 working days between those 2 years, that budget session and the general session.
So that's 60 days total over 2 years.
Yes, that's the limit.
And are those calendar days or are those days in session?
Those are days in session. Yep. So typically the general session, and it does not specify the allocation between general and budget, but the practice of the legislature has been to go about 36 to 40 days in general session, and that then leaves 20 to 24 days for the budget session, depending on the year.
Wow. So you really have to be ready to go when the legislature convenes, because you don't have much time to try to persuade people to do things. So
I learned that as a state legislator. We were sworn in January 2nd, and the session started 7 days later. It was about a week later. And we told our staff, we got to hit the ground running. We really do, because that general session is our chance to get through a lot of our election integrity priorities. 2/3 of the session are over after 8% of the term. And so it's very skewed towards that first 2 months. We really hit the ground running.
So let's go through, because I look at the list of things that you championed and got enacted with the help of your friends in the legislature. And I think this is one where you were a member of the House Freedom Caucus, or the Legislative Freedom Caucus, which is the conservatives in the legislature. And so you really understand the legislative process. When I look at this list of accomplishments and I realize what a short period of time you had to do it, it's pretty amazing. So talk about your priorities. I don't know if you want me to go through and ask you about them, or if you want to just go through them, because I think this is pretty amazing. So why don't you just walk everybody through the things that your office under your leadership got passed and enacted and signed by the governor this year.
Cleta, our number one priority was to close the primary. This had been something, as a legislator, every single year, conservatives in the legislature, we had tried to get done.
And explain to people what that means when you say to close the primary and why that was so important.
In Wyoming, we have same-day registration, which is a legacy of our motor voter exemption based on that federal law. But we also had in statute this phenomenon where individuals could cross into a primary up to the day of the election. It's an election integrity issue. Over time, the primary, because the Republican Party is so ascendant in Wyoming, really began when Obama became president. Just outrageous, the policies that he had, anti-coal, anti-oil and gas, anti-ag, not representing our key industries here in Wyoming. And we just saw a huge influx into the Republican primary in that the end of the first decade of the 2000s. And really, the action in these elections is in the primary. The winner of the primary outside of two counties, Albany County and Teton County, usually wins the election in legislative races and then also statewide races as well. What that led to was a lot of Democrats trying to cross over into the Republican primary. And because of the way our registration rules are, it was happening up to and including the day of the election, where Democrats would cross into the Republican primary as they entered the polls, cast a ballot in the Republican primary, and then cross back into the Democrat Party on the way out of the polls.
Oh, wow.
You would have up to 15 to 20% of the Republican primary vote being crossover voting. So it was
by Democrats deliberately coming over and trying to mess with the Republican primary.
Exactly.
Wow.
Just a tremendous problem. And we saw it in the, granted, it's great that Harriet won, but we saw it a lot in the Liz Cheney race where Democrats were crossing over to vote for Liz Cheney. So we said it's about time for us to close this primary to get this done. And we had a tee to green strategy on how we were going to get it done. We brought through a bill through the House. It went through 51-9. And then when the Senate committee dropped the bill on a 2-3 vote, there was a motion to bring the bill directly to the floor, which passed in a majority vote. And then at the end of the process, a lot of the folks that didn't want to see this come through brought a bunch of what I consider ticky-tack legal arguments about how this was going to affect individuals who turned 18 after the closeout period. We have a closeout period now the day before the beginning of the filing period, which is a very strong, it's a 90-day closeout period. Previous versions of the bill had a short of a 14-day closeout period. Some had a 10-day closeout period. We went for a very strong bill. This wasn't watered down. Over 90 days is in line with other states that have closed primaries. But at the end, a bunch of ticky-tack legal arguments were brought. Our office fought those off, and we succeeded by one vote over in the Senate in having a clean bill brought through the Senate. And then the same ticky-tack legal arguments were brought to the governor's office in terms of him signing the bill. We pushed back again. Luckily, the governor allowed the bill to become law. He did not sign the bill, which I was a little disappointed by, but he allowed it to become law, which, as we talked about earlier, I'm looking at the room where the Constitution was signed in the Capitol right out our window. But luckily our founders had a very prescient provision there that a governor could not pocket veto a bill. So when the allocated time for him to make a decision expired, the bill became law without his signature.
So when you say a closeout period, what is that? What does that mean?
There will be a period where individuals cannot cross over into another party. And it's the day before the beginning of the filing period, begins more or less May 15th. We have a late primary. It's usually about August 16th. In 2024, it's more like August 21st. So it's basically a 90-day closeout period, the way that the statute reads and the way it interacts with the filing period.
So if you want to change your party affiliation, you cannot do that by just going over and casting a ballot in the opposing party's primary on election day. You have to actually file a change of party affiliation and before filing for office, for the candidate filing. And you can't change your party affiliation again until after the election. Is that right?
Exactly. There's also that post period where there's a lockout in the post period, but you would have to change your registration the day before the beginning of the filing period, which more or less happens about May 15th on more or less an August 15th to 20th primary. So it's about 90 days.
But what kind of legal argument were people making? Simply because the reason I'm asking that is because there are Supreme Court decisions which have, which basically say that parties can establish their own rules for who can participate in their primaries. I kind of been wondering for years why more political parties don't challenge some of these decisions by legislatures to superimpose their will. But in any event, if it is by statute, I just wonder what would they say would be a legal impediment to establishing the closed primary?
In the 7 years I've been a legislator and now as Secretary of State, I'll tell you, I've heard every argument in the book and sadly, they defeated this.
Wow.
Every year I was in the legislature until the first year as SOS, we were able to bring that through. And if you look back since the year 2000, which all the archives since the year 2000 are online, it had been brought almost every year to do this. And I heard every argument in the book, including the argument that the lockout period wasn't allowed because that because of quote unquote free association. Well, there are so many states with closed primaries, Cleta, as you know. Yeah, I mean, it's so that was an absurd argument. That was one of the legal arguments that was brought up to even this year, although we did a very good job of obliterating it in committee when it was brought. But then at the end, they brought this very ticky-tack argument about the use of elector versus qualified elector in the statute and whether that would disqualify someone who was eligible after May 15th, say someone who turned 18 on June 15th, would they be able to not only register but also affiliate because they were a new registrant? And the statute is very clear that while individuals can't cross parties after May 15th, if someone has newly qualified, say they turned 18,
right,
or they newly qualified via being a resident, then they would be able to register and affiliate. Right. It's just somebody can't cross parties. And that was very clear if you look at the language in the bill. And we're going to further make it clear there's probably going to be a statutory mechanism that further makes it clear in the 2024 session. But the statute is operable as it reads now. It's more than operable. And I just noted that because to the end, it was a fight to the end on this thing. And we expected that. But the Wyoming Secretary of State's office, we worked very hard to the end to
make sure
that this is going to become law and to push back on a lot of these ticky-tack attempts to try to defeat it.
Well, you know, I am sure that front and center in everybody's mind was what was going on, what went on last year with Liz Cheney, where she had said at the outset, oh, no, I'm not going to try to get Democrats to cross over to vote for me in the primary. And by the end, that was her whole campaign, was to get enough Democrats to
very troubling
for her to win the Republican primary. So she actually, I think one of the legacy she leaves is that people were able to see through and witness the problems with that open primary.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the lies that Liz Cheney told while in office, the lies she told us every time she ran for office, then the arrogance of the campaign at the end. Wow. And I'm switching gears here a little bit to another bill that, you know, it's a segue a little bit, what you talked about there. At the end of the campaign in the last 3 weeks, she sent out these absentee ballot request forms. Basically, what she was doing was trying to get individuals to not only potentially change parties, but request an absentee ballot. And it was posing as if almost she was a county clerk, as if the campaign, it was basically an election, an official form. It was posing as an official form. Another bill we tried to bring through was a bill to ban that practice. And we brought that through. It was watered down over in the Senate, over in the House. The House Freedom Caucus brought an amendment to strengthen that, an amendment that we had drafted in committee and unfortunately hadn't been brought through committee, but it was brought on the floor and it was strengthened, that bill, to actually do something to stop these phony absentee ballot request forms. And of course, Cleta, you know, I mean, this is a favorite tactic of the Zuck Bucks, the Soros Bucks, to have these phony absentee ballot request forms. And we brought that through with the strong language and then the governor vetoed it. I mean, that was—
What is his problem?
Very troubling. Well, he cited the strong language. I mean, in the Senate version, the way it was drafted, it would have required the absentee ballot request form to impersonate the clerk. And we thought that language wasn't strong enough because we also thought that in cases where a clerk wasn't being impersonated, but you had an official absentee ballot request form, something posing as an absentee ballot request form, even if a clerk wasn't being impersonated, which requires sort of a— And I think the way the bill was drafted out of the Senate, it probably would not have resulted in a prosecution in the case that we saw in the 2022 election with that arrogant move by the Liz Cheney campaign. We wanted it to apply to cases like that, where you had an official form that was being sent. And so that was the language we brought through. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, sometimes when strong bills go through the process, they unfortunately get vetoed. But to me, I want a bill that does something. Like on the crossover ban that we talked about earlier, we made sure that we were going to have a real lockout period, not some phony 7 to 14 day period, but a 90 day period that was along the lines of other states that have close primaries. Same thing on the Senate File 131, on these phony absentee ballot request forms that you talked about that Liz Cheney did in her arrogant campaign last year. We wanted to have some real language, some real teeth in the statute books. And unfortunately, that's what the governor cited in his veto, is what he didn't like there. So very unfortunate, but we're going to keep
back. You'll be back.
We're going to keep working on it. But yes, the campaign of the arrogant campaign of Liz Cheney, the lies that she told, it was defeated. But luckily it was defeated. But it also has a legacy in bringing through some election integrity measures, because some of the tactics she exploited, whether it was trying to exploit our crossover loophole or this loophole on official absentee ballots, it got a lot of attention, and we were able to bring through a lot of changes that fixed the loopholes that she exploited in her arrogant campaign. Crossover, we were successful on. And this phony absentee ballot request form issue, we're going to keep working on that Senate File 131.
Well, I'm really glad to hear you're going to keep working on that, because there are all these left-wing groups that spend hundreds of millions of dollars. They get lists of voters that they target, and then they send them, as you say, they send these letters with an application for an absentee ballot. And people believe that these are coming from the election office when they're not. And I know that in 2020, a neighbor of mine brought me four of these that had been sent to her brother. And she said they've sent him four absentee ballots. You know, she thought it was the county sending this. I said, no, this is not the county. This is a left-wing group, and they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars all over the country doing this. But in some cases, and I don't know if this is the case in Wyoming, but in some cases, unless it's specifically prohibited by law, these organizations will pre-populate the absentee ballot application form. So all the voter is supposed to do is sign it and send it to the election office. So this is a big issue going on in a lot of states, trying to get control of that, because it is a great opportunity for fraud, particularly when those then go back to the campaign. If they're returned, or they go back to the campaign, if they're returned undeliverable, if they go back to the campaign or to the third party group, then that gives them, aha, this is somebody who's on the voter registration rolls, but this is returned undeliverable. But the county doesn't know that. So now then they have an opportunity to have a whole list of people that they can then try to obtain their ballots and vote them illegally. That's one of the things that we've been finding in other states. So it's a big problem. Well, so I'm glad you're working on this, because it is a big vulnerability.
Thank you, Cleta. Thank you. And the other thing, it's a favorite tactic, as you were talking about, of the Soros Bucks, the Zuck Bucks groups. 24 states have banned Zuck Bucks, private funding of elections. And that's another priority. I know we're going to get back to priorities we brought through, but this was another one that we had a legislative vehicle. It was House Bill 224, but it wasn't even referred to committee. It had a little bit of a high bill number, and also the Corporations Elections Committee, which has jurisdiction, had a lot on its docket before the deadline. But unfortunately, we were not able to get that referred to committee. And so we're working on that in what's called the interim, the time between sessions, the time between the general session and the budget session. And we just had a joint corporations, elections, political subdivisions committee meeting, which has jurisdiction over elections. And we requested a bill draft to be done on this issue, this private funding of elections, banning that. And we were able to get that bill draft motion. So at that next meeting, hopefully we'll have a bill draft before the committee. And if we can bring that through the committee, that's going to be great, because 24 states have done that. And that Zuckbucks deal is very troubling. I mean, as you know, Cleta, I mean, there's been a lot of research on this. The third party funding of elections, and I was, it was very
shocking. It's shocking.
It is more than what's called the hard money, the money that is donated directly to campaigns and spent, plus the soft, what's called soft money, the money that's donated to PACs combined.
Yes.
Nationwide, this third party funding of elections. Very troubling.
Well, it's very troubling. And now we have enter yet another leftist billionaire, Bill Gates. And he and his audacious project are now, they're pouring money into election offices through something called the U.S. Alliance on Election Excellence. I don't know if you've run across them, but they're a consortium of the groups, including the two groups that process the Zuckerbucks in 2020. And they're trying to get their fingers into every election office in America. So we're really working on how to not only prohibit these private funding, but also these relationships where they're getting election offices in some states. They come in and say, oh, we'll help you. We're going to help you. But you have to turn over to us non-public proprietary information on your systems, on your voters, on your machinery. I mean, it's real. And it's, you know, they're pledging to spend $80+ million this year on that. So it's pretty scary. So thank you for working on
that. That's a very troubling development. And we are working on that, pushing back on that.
So voter ID is something you mentioned you've been working on as a legislator and successfully got that across the finish line. Tell us about where voter ID stands in Wyoming now. What did you do this year, and what do you have left to do that you're working on voter ID?
Well, voter ID is near and dear to my heart. Brought that through as the lead sponsor of that bill in the 2021 session. The way it was drafted, and we want it to be for absentee ballots as well, but ultimately, to bring it through, the way it was drafted, it was supposed to apply to all voting with an in-person nexus. That was the issue that we handled in the 2021 session. There was a small loophole that was exploited in the 2022 election, where an absentee ballot that was initiated in person, the clerk interpreted the statute that did not require an ID. And so one of the things we did was close that loophole so that would require an ID as well. And then one of our medium-term goals is to have voter ID for the absentee ballots as well, because while the clerks pushed back a little more on that one, and they pushed back on the in-person one in 2018, 2019, 2020, and frankly, were heavily involved in defeating those versions of the bill. 2021, after the fiasco 2020 election, they did, their position changed a little bit, and luckily we were able to bring that through in the 2021 session. But it was for in-person voting. What I want to do is expand it to the absentee ballots as well. Then in the 2022 session, the 2023 session, we also closed that loophole that was exploited in that 2022 election.
So what is the next step then to get it to will there be another bill about ensuring voter ID is required for voting by mail, for applying and returning absentee ballots?
I anticipate that in the 2024 session, it is a budget session. So one of the things in our state constitution, and like anything, there's cases where
it's not to, it doesn't play out well, but there's also cases where it is good. And one of the provisions in the state constitution that allows us to stop a lot of liberal bills, but it also unfortunately stops some conservative ones as well, is that in the budget year, you need a 2/3 majority for introduction in the House of Origin. So in the session next year, I do anticipate there will be a bill on this, but it will require 2/3 in the House of Origin, which is a little bit of a hurdle.
That's pretty steep.
That's why when we got in there, we really hit the ground running on stopping the crossover voting, because it's very difficult to bring through election related bills in the budget year.
Yeah, I can see that. But you've gotten things done with that you wanted so far, and there's always more to do, but that's the nature of legislating. So voter ID, Wyoming now has voter ID applicable, and just have to keep working to get it to the absentee voting. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we want to continue to expand voter ID and strengthen it.
All right. So another area in which you work has to do with transparency and voter rolls. And this is something you and I talked about earlier this year. So talk about what you got done in that regard.
One of the reasons I ran for this office and was very troubled by the end of the term of my predecessor, Ed Buchanan, is he went in a direction really flying in the face of transparency at the end of his term. And I think he had kind of decided that he wasn't going to run, was a lame duck. And that's when a lot of the bad things come out, unfortunately. And one of the things that he did was reverse a policy that had been in place for 2 decades, which was to release in the voter rolls what's called this voter ID number. And Cleta, you're very familiar with this. This is a very important number, which is assigned to individuals. It's a product of HAVA. And what it does is it basically helps to ensure in the election integrity community that there isn't double voting happening across jurisdictional lines, because this number follows an individual as they vote, move across state or across county lines, but it also makes sure that there isn't double voting happening. Mm-hmm. So that change happened last year where this was not being released. The other thing that was not being released, flying in the face of a decade and a half of practice in this office, was absentee ballot status. And that was very troubling to me. And I want transparency in the voter rolls. I think that's an important conservative election integrity priority, and a priority that there could be consensus on. It could be a bipartisan consensus, but it's also an election integrity measure. One of the things I asked our council to do when entering office, it was one of the first things I did on day one, was to review that. And when we reviewed the statute, it was pretty clear from the legislative intent that they wanted these two items to be released, although it was somewhat debatable. But if you look at the history of the statute, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty of this, but there were a couple changes made in the 2004 session that if you interpreted them, it was pretty clear that they wanted to lean towards transparency on these two issues. So we reversed what Ed Buchanan had done in the 2022 cycle. Not only that, we brought through a bill through the legislature. It was House Bill 5, which codified that in place so that, I'm not going to be here forever. So a future Secretary of State wouldn't be able to change it back. And it made the statute very clear.
Well, I'll tell you something. Those voter ID numbers, for people who don't know what that is, it's when you register to vote and the election office assigns you a number. It's not your birthday. It's not your Social Security number. It is a number assigned to you by the election administration. And you're saying that number follows you if you move within the state and change your address, that same number follows you. Is that what
Yes.
you're saying?
Yes. And that's a product of HAVA supposed to help in identifying double voting.
Well, let me tell you, I work very closely with citizens all over the country who are volunteering, doing work on checking voter rolls in their counties and their states. And that voter ID number is absolutely essential to being able to know if people are registered more than once, because they may have, you know, the DMV causes a lot of this, where the DMV registers people. I don't know that, though. Are you, does your DMV register people in Wyoming? Or are you able
luckily, to just... Luckily, we are one of the states that has a motor voter exemption. And so we have an exemption. That's why we have same day registration. Again, you won't be able to cross over if you have an existing registration.
Right.
But we do have same day registration. That's sort of the trade-off in this unfortunate federal statute. In order to get an exemption from the motor voter, you have to allow that same day registration.
So you now don't have to have you don't have to receive DMV registration. They're not doing
registration.
We don't
have that motor voter.
Well, let me tell you what, that is really important, because we really ought to figure out how to get other states to follow your lead and try to figure out. I mean, that motor voters, National Voter Registration Act, 30 years old this past month, and really, really needs some changes, and if not being repealed, but in any event.
You know, Ecleta, and we came out of the joint corporations meeting, and there's so many examples of this, and they've flown under the radar of these federal statutes that have really undermined election integrity over the years. I mean, one of the things we're trying to get done in the interim committee, and I feel good that we're going to get it done. I think it's going to be a long process, but I think we're going to bring it through this next session. One of our priorities, we talked about banning Zuckbucks, but the other one is getting a durational residency requirement in place. Our state constitution has a one-year durational residency requirement that unfortunately was struck down as a result of a Supreme Court decision from 1972.
I remember.
A totally activist court decision.
Yeah.
Very similar to Roe v. Wade. They argued.
Was that the Common Cause case?
That was the Dunn case, I believe.
Okay.
In 1972. I believe it's Dunn, I think. And then the Wyoming counterpart, then the state Supreme Court overturned our one-year constitutional residency requirement 1 year later in 1973 in the Del Giorno case. But it's very similar to in terms of the premises that the court used to come to their absurd conclusion, very similar to Roe v. Wade, in that they used this tortured 14th Amendment sort of justification. And the consequence of that is that we now have no durational residency requirement in Wyoming. It's a huge hole in our statutes. So we're trying to get a 30-day requirement, a statutory requirement in place, which other states have. It has survived constitutional scrutiny. Very confident will survive constitutional scrutiny. And while I'd like to have a longer one, 30 days is better than nothing, which is basically where we're at right now. And it's a consequence of some really bad federal statutes and also some really bad Supreme Court decisions from the early 70s.
Right. When they were making some pretty bad decisions that we're still trying to get recovery from. But anyway, what you did on the transparency in the voter rolls and the ID numbers for voters, that's really important to those of us who are very concerned about clean voter rolls. So thanks for doing that. And I do think the idea, let me ask you this question. You mentioned there are two counties that are primarily, that are not what we consider red county. Are those where universities are by chance?
Well, Albany County is where our University of Wyoming is located. And then Teton County is, you know, they've had a long history there, but yeah, University of Wyoming is out where Albany County is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, your favorite former Congresswoman, Liz Cheney, took it upon herself when she was giving her commencement speech over the weekend to attack me personally, because I have raised concerns about the fact that the left has pushed for locating polling places on college campuses and where they have same day registration, and then pushing for through the Department of U.S. Department of Education using our tax dollars to U.S. Department of Education has sent notices to all colleges and universities that they must register students to vote when they apply for admission and when they register for classes. So, I mean, how many registrations is that when you apply for financial aid? The U.S. financial aid agency requires that you have to register to vote when you apply for financial aid. And then one of the things Biden issued an executive order 2 years ago, which all federal agencies are supposed to have a voter registration plan and a get out the vote plan. And they're also allowed to make grants to approved agencies. Doesn't say what the criteria is. Both Michelle Obama and Valerie Jarrett have 501c3 organizations focused solely on the college student, getting them out to vote. And why do they do that? Because they have not, it's been a goal of the left for more than a decade to try to gin up the college student turnout, because they know that 85, 90, 95% of those votes are going to go for Democrats. So, you know, I've raised this question. And that why are polling places located on facilities where they often only allow one political party and one political ideology to speak on the campus? And why do we, is that appropriate to put a polling place someplace that benefits one political party over another? And of course, she interprets that and says that I'm trying to make it harder for college kids to vote. I'm not trying to make it harder for them to vote, but I think that they should actually be residents of the state if they're getting in-state tuition. But if they're out-of-state students, why are they having a polling place where they can vote for the county commissioner and the legislators and all of that? So I think there are a lot of issues here that she decided to just take a whack at me, no doubt because of my involvement with President Trump in the 2020 post-election. But
Well, and Liz Cheney is just out of control. I mean, her lying and it's just consistent. And it's very unfortunate. And then she's attacked conservatives over and over and over again. And she has this glee in the way she does it. But the way she misrepresented herself when she first ran for election here in Wyoming, I mean, it's very troubling.
Well, and the people of Wyoming wised up finally and decided that her name wasn't going to carry the day any longer. But I do think it's important that we actually examine a lot of things that the left has done over the years with their billionaire dollars over the last decade, changing election systems to the point where I think now it's good to go back and look at some of those things and say, wait, what have they done to our election system? And this whole effort that has been sort of under the radar on college student voter turnout. They're not exactly, in my view, a protected class, and we need to pay attention to that. So, well, another area that you really excelled in was the whole notion of ranked choice voting and recognizing the threats coming from that. So tell everybody about what you did with regard to ranked choice voting, what's on the horizon on that going forward.
We defeated a bill that had been brought through that corporation's elections political subdivision committee to have a ranked choice voting procedure. And this is a very troubling trend across the nation.
Yeah.
We've seen it in Alaska, Cleta.
Yep.
Where it takes a month to count the vote. You have ballot exhaustion because people don't fill out the full ballot because there's 30 questions with 20 candidates in each race. It's going to take an hour and a half to fill out the ballot. The New York City has these tabulation errors in their mayoral race. it takes 3 to 4 weeks to count. It's a disaster. And we see it in Alaska. We see it in all these left-wing jurisdictions, Maine, that have adopted it. But the Zuckbucks, Fort Soros Bucks folks, they're trying to bring that through across the nation. And it's a very troubling trend. And one of the techniques they're using, they had done this in Utah, is that they said, well, we're going to pilot it in some municipal races. That's what they did in Utah. And of course, that's getting it through the door. That's what they brought through the committee. And we were able to defeat that in committee and was very, very pleased that we were able to do that. Because it's a very troubling trend, and it's not a good deal for election integrity.
Well, and thank you for being on the high alert to keep that from getting through committee, because we're working on a lot of bills in other places to try to say the state is actually banning ranked choice voting so that local municipalities are not thinking that they can do it without state approval. So it's a big challenge. And you're right. It's a way to manipulate the system to try to produce an outcome that they want, which is crazy. And cleaning up voter rolls. I know that's another thing that you have been involved in. Tell everybody what you're doing on that.
Yes, cleaning up voter rolls. We have a systems change we're going to be bringing to WildReg, where it's going to speed up the rate at which that the system processes death records, and means that we're going to be able to be quicker in cleaning up those rolls. That's a key priority for me. Also, a couple other legislative items, Cleta. Would you mind I talk about a couple of legislative items that we worked on?
Absolutely. Sounds good.
No, I've been very troubled by the enormous increase in terms of periods of time for the early voting.
Oh, yeah.
And Wyoming was tied for longest in the nation, the 45 days of early voting, just way too long. And so we were able to bring that down to 28 days. Yes.
Wow.
So that puts more in the middle of the pack. That's going to be effective in the 2024 election. It's just way too long it was. And then also we defeated a bill that would have prohibited any eyeball examination of the ballot, including CVRs. That was House Bill 6.
Cast vote records.
Right. It was a very troubling the way that it was worded. The implications of this bill, this House Bill 6, and we were able to defeat that. So that was another big legislative accomplishment that we had on the elections front during the session.
You're making a really good point here. I need to remember to reinforce. I want to reinforce that. It's not just that getting good things passed, but it's also stopping bad things. And that's what we haven't seen enough of on the part of conservatives and Republicans and positions of responsibility for elections, whether it's legislators or secretaries of state. We have not had the kind of leadership that you're exhibiting to not only push through necessary and needed changes that we would consider to be positive for protecting the entirety of the elections, but stopping some of these cockamamie ideas. So thank you for stopping bad things from happening. We need more of that. We need more.
We're like sentinels. I always say that, you know, we've got to be watching because there's a lot of bad proposals coming through.
So much.
Nationally, the trends, some of the trends there.
When you go to, so this is your first year as Secretary of State, tell everybody, what are your impressions of when you've gone to the National Association of Secretaries of State or meeting with other fellow Republican Secretaries of State? What are you hearing? What are you seeing nationally that people who care about the integrity of elections need to be concerned about? Do you have a pretty good group of people who'll send you things and say, watch out for this, watch out for that? Or do you have to pretty much do that on your own?
Well, I've gotten somewhat close to Mac Warner from West Virginia.
Great.
Jay Ashcroft from Missouri. Trey Hargett from Tennessee. Those are three that I've gotten particularly close to, and Frank LaRose too from Ohio. They were heavily. Wyoming has never been a member of ERIC, and it never will be as long as I'm Secretary of State. But I've also talked with them and encouraged them to leave Eric. I think Eric, that board just totally has been co-opted. And I think it was a very positive development that those states left Eric. So that's one of the things we've been talking about a lot is the very troubling direction on that Eric board and the need for states that believe in election integrity to leave that board, that leave that system.
Yeah, that's good. Well, there's a lot that, as you noted, needs to be done, but boy, I put Wyoming right up there with heading the right direction under your leadership. It's great. I mean, I do wish we could get more states and more state election officials to follow your lead, because it does take a lot of direct involvement by your office to get these legislative accomplishments.
Well, thanks, Cleta. And we've been working really diligently here. I love being able to do public service. It's a huge honor. I love doing it as a legislator, being able to serve my neighbors in East Casper, and now being able to do it statewide, and also the Secretary of State is the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Wyoming. So that's been great to serve in that capacity. Couple other things I want to talk about, and it's a little bit outside of the election sphere. Another one of the things the Secretary of State does is in Wyoming is we have regulatory authority over broker dealers, securities advisors, broker dealers. And we were very concerned about this ESG trend worldwide.
Broker dealers are security stock brokers and people who deal in selling stocks and bonds and public offerings and that kind of thing.
And this ESG trend.
And that's that environmental, social governance. That's that whole left wing. Talk a little bit about what that is.
And what they're trying to do is deny capital to all the industries they don't like. So, and the industries that are core industries here in the state of Wyoming, coal, oil, gas, ag, they want to turn us into vassals. I mean, that's what they're trying to do by preventing us from reaching our full potential. So their latest trick is to try to deny capital to those industries. And of course, if they're able to deny capital, they're able to prevent us from being able to invest and to grow and to reach our full potential, and those industries from being able to survive, which unfortunately is the radical left's goal. So we're very concerned about ESG. And we just issued an historic rulemaking, which if it does go through, will be the first anti-ESG action in our state history that has the effect and force of law, which will say that any ESG product that any securities advisor, broker dealer tries to sell, that they're going to have to be transparent, that is not profit maximizing behavior, because we're very concerned that some entities are going to try to sell these products without being upfront, that this is not profit maximizing behavior. What the left is trying to do is basically turn on its head the principles of being a fiduciary that have been around for centuries, which is that they're going to be engaging in profit maximizing behavior. Well, now suddenly they're trying to turn that definition on its head and potentially offer these products without being transparent about it. So we're going to require that transparency, and they're going to have to say verbally and in a written form. And it's not going to be some ticky-tack 4-point font deal. This is going to be a real form that is going to explain, in addition to a verbal accompaniment, that this is not profit-maximizing behavior. This is driven by a woke political agenda.
Well, how
and this ESG is a woke clown show. I mean, that's really what it is, Cleta.
Well, and it's very dangerous. It's extremely dangerous, and I would imagine that that would impact your public employee pension funds, your teachers' retirement systems, and all. I mean, that they would have had investment funds, both public and private, divest from investing in oil companies, which has been a very profitable stock for the last several years. And that's a complete breach of fiduciary duty. If you're on the board of a pension fund, or you're a pension advisor, investment advisor, and you're not recommending certain things because of certain investments, because for political, philosophical, ideological reasons, rather than what's best for your customer, your bondholder, your stockholders. I mean, I just sometimes wake up and think, how did this all happen? Who has done this to us? It's frightening.
Well, Cleta, you bring out another important angle in taking on ESG and defeating ESG, which is the public funds issue. I mean, Wyoming, in our permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund, we invest proceeds from our mineral revenues for future generations. I mean, you're talking about, you know, when you include the retirement funds, everything together, I mean, you're talking about $20 billion. We want to make sure that those funds are not interacting with any ESG product, any ESG entity, that our state is anti-ESG because it's not consistent with our Wyoming values.
I think that's wonderful. I'm glad you mentioned that and glad you're working on that. But you've got a full platter of issues and principles. So these are not just issues. These are principles. These are principles of saving our elections, principles of protecting basically free enterprise and the ability of Wyoming industries to hire and employ people who can then work hard and pay taxes and support the schools and the roads. And I mean, to me, all of this is just all these things that we're having to deal with just are basically about saving our country. And the only way we do it is by having good leaders, and very much appreciate all you're doing there in Wyoming. It's a good model for other states, and it can be done in other states. You're showing that it can be done. So we appreciate that, and appreciate all that you're doing, Chuck.
Thank you, Cleta. Every day we come in and you know, I tell our staff, I mean, every day is 0.07%. I did the math of our 4-year term. And so we got to every day make use of it. We got to do good work every single day. And whether that's customer service on our business division, we can talk about that. I mean, we're top 3 in the nation on our business filings. We've had over 20% growth on our business filings year to year. It's actually our biggest division in the Wyoming Secretary of State's office. Whether it's our elections division, our elections work, our compliance work, our work on the on this anti-ESG rule, we just need every day to continue to do good work for the citizens of Wyoming. And I'm very proud of our work in the Wyoming Secretary of State's office, and we're going to keep getting better every day. I mean, we get attacked, Cleta, as you know. I mean, we get attacked on bringing election integrity items, and I just tell the left-wing media, the woke media, I call them one of the papers here is the Star Tribune. I call it the Red Star Tribune, propped on the Platte. They attack me every single time we bring an election integrity measure. And every time it's about, I try to explain to them, this is about improvement. This is about improving the way we do elections. That's what election integrity is about. And that's what we're doing at the Wyoming Secretary of State's office. So thank you for this opportunity to come on the program. My cell is 307-251-1372, 307-251-1372. If anyone wants to contact me with your concerns or suggestions or anything, I want to be very accountable to the people and very transparent and also very available. So please contact me, and thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. Mr. Secretary, I love calling you that. I love the fact that you're doing all you're doing. Thanks for spending time with us. And I'm sure we'll be hoping and watching and cheering you on. And we'll have you back when you want to give a report about all the good things you've done next year. So thanks for everything. And we'll be in touch.
Thank you.
And that concludes this episode of Who's Counting. Please subscribe, share this with your friends. Tell people about the who'scounting.us website, which is where you can go and find our Citizen's Guide to Building an Election Integrity Infrastructure, and find out how you can be an effective an active citizen in protecting our elections and learn about what's going on in election integrity work across the country. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. Thank you for joining Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Please help us fight big tech censorship. Like and subscribe to this podcast, and be sure to share it with your friends. You can become part of this election integrity movement by signing up to join the Election Integrity Network. Go to whoscounting.us. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Election Integrity Network.